And welcome to your community radio station. First off, remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I'm Investment Advisor Representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, registered investment advisor. Indices I may mention are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. Views expressed on this show are the opinions of myself, any guests I might have, or any authors of any articles I may read. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, the station staff members, or underwriters. Welcome to the 298th show, the last of our series on the hottest issue in California, fire insurance. This will be third of our series. We had two shows on the Firewise communities with Mr. Bob Long. Did one, and then we got a good response for that, so we did another one. Today we're going to cover the California Fair Plan. But first, we'll cover the markets, okay? This show is about money and other things. And money doesn't matter. It matters. Money affects us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, some way or another, controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, money matters. It's about you. Yes, it is. Taking a look at the markets today. Now, I realize that a lot of people do not own stocks, and the more the economy plugs along and we get inflation and it gets harder and harder to make ends meet, fewer and fewer people will probably own securities. But we do still cover them here, of course. A lot of people have retirement accounts, brokerage accounts, and they want to know what's going on and my take on it. So the Dow basically did reach a high of 28,164 during our last show, about right around there somewhere. We were over 28,000. And as always, we mention on this show that the large numbers, 28,000, 27,000, 29,000, 26,000, the 1,000 numbers, are what technical analysts may regard as resistance and support. So when we were over 28,000, 28,000 below, in other words, we were at 28,164 on November 27th, 28,164, the number 28,000, which would be what, 164 points below where it had been, was a support level. And 28,000, if you were under it, like we are today at 27,680, the large number above it now is a resistance level. So if you're under it, the number above is resistance. If you're over it, the number below is support. Now, the technical analysts believe that these major numbers, the even numbers, 28,000, 27,000, are numbers to watch. Can a market go through those large numbers like a glass ceiling and stay above them? And the longer they stay above them, the more the support. And then, of course, 27,000 below us, because we're at 27,680 right now, would be a support level. And as mentioned, when it popped through 28,000 on the last show, we mentioned, now let's see if it's going to be able to hold. And it did not. So we are now down between 27,680, somewhere in there. And the general belief is that for support levels, when it hits a support level below, you know, it might have a tendency to bounce off and resume its upward trend. And when it hits a resistance level above, it might have a tendency to bounce off and bounce back down. The general belief is if it pops through a resistance level a couple of times, in other words, if it gets through 28,000 a couple of times and stays there on a close of a day, that's good. Stays there on a Friday, close of a week, that'd be better. So the longer it stays, the more of a support level it becomes. That's what the technicians think. Now, no one can prognosticate markets directions anytime, anywhere, anyhow. So that's just what they believe, okay? They look at historical patterns and try to draw some inference on where the market is going to go if from there. Well, it didn't hold. It's now down to 27,006. Nobody really knows the reason, but the most widely accepted reason among the analysts that I read and myself is that the White House came out and said just a couple of days ago, that the Chinese tariffs, which seems to be the thing, White House came out and said, you know, we may have to wait till after the election. And bingo, it started down. And then yesterday morning, they came out and they said, well, we may be closer to a deal than what we think. So there is a cycle here. And I've read about the cycle. It's not me, but it is a cycle. And here's some of the theories. One theory, I do not recall who put this out. I suppose I could Google it up, but he basically said, don't trade on anything the White House says immediately anymore. Don't trade because it can be knee-jerk reaction. So you don't trade on something comes out from the White House from Trump saying something. Don't trade on it. That's one person's opinion. The cycle, which was put forward by a few analysts, the cycle is goes around and around. Market runs, and then the White House tweets something negative about tariffs, and the market falls. And then the market stabilizes, and then the White House tweets something positive about tariffs, and the market runs again. And that cycle just repeats. He tweets something that the tariffs are not so good, and the market falls, and then the market... Here's a tweet that something's going a little bit better, and it rises again, and around and around and around and around we go. So this seems to be just what happened in the last week. And keep in mind, nobody can prognosticate where market's going to go. Some people are better at it, but nobody's 100% foolproof. No system, nothing. Because the market is a sociological experiment. It is basically the sum of all the beliefs of all the traders and investors in it at any one given day. If there's more buyers and sellers, the market will run up. If there's more sellers and buyers, the market will run down. So that's one of the reasons why economics is a social science with a social college degree and not a science, okay, versus a social science, right? Psychology, social science, we don't know exactly what people will do. We don't know what makes people tick. We have an idea, but there's always exceptions. And the same thing with economics. We have an idea what the market may or may not do based on historical performance, but we don't know. And that's why they give a degree, a Bachelor of Arts, for an economics degree. And because it's not, nothing is really proven in the markets as far as which direction it goes, what it'll do, where it goes. So today it's sitting, it's up 23, kind of flat, probably waiting to see what's going to happen. December 15th is a day, not a day in infamy, but a day that new tariffs will be kicking in for China. So don't know what's going to happen there. You know, if December 15th they say they reach a deal, the market could run or it could fall. Well, somebody would say, why would it fall? Well, it could fall because there's an old saying, you buy the rumor, sell the news. So the rumor could be, as an example, the rumor could be, oh, he's going to reach a deal, and people will trade in the market and drive it up on that rumor. And then when they finally announce the deal, the market could fall. Trade the rumor, sell the news. That's not always what happens. Nobody knows what always happens. So we don't know. Everybody believes that when they come out with a deal, the market will run. And anytime everybody believes the same thing, my dad would say nobody's thinking. When everybody's thinking the same thing, nobody's thinking, right? So, okay. So I have to say hello to my good friend Sally Jo, a lovely, beautiful woman. And she tunes in every time, every year, every day, every show. I met her years ago at this station. We were both doing public service announcements. And she is as lovely as she was the first day I saw her. Hasn't aged a bit. Amazing. Good genes. Yes, ma'am. So a big hi goes out to Sally Jo. You know who you are. And so we'll see where the market goes. You know, I don't know. It's crazy. It really is crazy. just, you know, it's a difficult market to trade. I guess if you're an expert trader and you trade it on volatility, it'd probably be a good market to trade. But for investors, it's a mother. I mean, you know, I hate to use that term, but it's difficult. It's a difficult trading environment, difficult investing environment. I'm looking at a five-year plan, five-year chart here, December 8th, 2014. Dow sat at 17,672. And then here we sit at 27,675. So back in 14, it was at 17,737, somewhere near. Now it's at 27. So one of the common things that I hear from investors sometimes is that, you know, if we take the 17,000 number and we divide it by the 27,000 number, okay, that's an increase of 38%. And people would say, well, how come my stock portfolio didn't rise 38%? Well, I guess it could have if you were all invested in stocks completely. Then you might have seen that. But let's say the market went the other way and you saw 38% loss. So it is of my opinion that most advisors, and from talking to a lot of advisors, that modern portfolio theory says that you don't invest in all stocks. You want to invest in some fixed income and things that have a tendency, not an absolute, but a tendency to move opposite of the market. It is thought that when bonds, fixed income, go down, market runs, bonds go down, and then when the market falls, people pile back into the safer investments, regarded as safer investments. Bonds can have their own risk, of course, and bonds will run when the market falls. So the general belief is to balance that so you don't get too hurt. And so that's the belief, modern portfolio theory, MPT. It also states that diversification, you just don't buy all of one particular stock, or you just don't buy all stocks, you buy some fixed income in there as well. And then there's two common beliefs, well, one common, one so not common, okay? There is a good army of people that believe you just stay in the market for the long haul and always goes up. And you could look at a Dow chart and you could make that argument, but things are fine until they're not fine, right? Nobody can say, right? If nobody can say anything about where the market can go, to say that markets always go up in the long haul is something basically you can't say because you don't know, right? Well, nobody knows. I can say that the United States deficit, it took us about 200 years to spend the first $1 trillion in debt. Debt is spending more than you make, okay? And 1776 or somewhere in the 1990s, we finally ran up $1 trillion in debt. The deficit went over $1 trillion. And then next 8-9 years, it went from $1 trillion to $8 trillion. And then the next 8-9 years, it went from $8 trillion to about $18 trillion, where it sits now. And it's going up about somewhere about $1 trillion a year. So think about that now. We were running $1 trillion deficit in the first 200 and something years, and now we're running $1 trillion every year. So that sounds like an exponential growth to me. And exponential growth can occur in debt, in heavy debt. Like if you give somebody a credit card, they keep spending and spending, pretty soon the interest adds on top of the principal. And not only if you stop spending, is the balance growing because the interest payments run. If you spend on top of that, then they run even faster. So we will keep an eye on the market so you don't have to. I'll give you a report every so often, but it is up 35. Dow's up 35. There are other markets, of course, available to you. NASDAQ and the S&P and the Russell. There are other ones, emerging markets, all sorts of things. You can bet any way you want, if you want to call it betting or investing. So we'll be right back to cover the much discussed ballyhooed, I don't know about that one, CalFare plan. We'll talk about what it is and we'll read the policy.
Call
And welcome back. My name is Mark Cuniberti. Thanks for joining me today on Money Matters, your economic forum. So we're back on to the issue of fire insurance, which has affected so many people. Anyway, Ricardo Lara, the California Insurance Commissioner, came out today and made an edict, okay? I won't read you the whole communication. Thanks to Ryan Dunstan, too. He's a local here that also published this as well. He published a little bit earlier than I did. And so, Ryan, thank you very much. Statement comes out and says that many communities across the state finding affordable comprehensive fire insurance has become difficult, blah, 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 blah. So, enacted Senate Bill 824 will affect those in recent fires that were declared an emergency. Here's how it reads. An insurer shall not cancel or refuse to renew a policy of residential property insurance for property located in any zip code within or adjacent to a fire perimeter for 1 year after the declaration of state of emergency, as defined in Section 8558 of the Government Code, based solely on the fact that the insurer's structure is located in an area which a wildfire has occurred. In other words, what they're saying, if you are in a declared emergency fire zone, you can't get your policy canceled for a year. He goes on to say that if somebody did get canceled, the admitted and non-admitted insurers writing residential property insurance in the state of California must offer to rescind any notice of cancellation or non-renewal. Since the governor's October 11th, 25th, or 27th declaration of an emergency and offer to reinstate or renew the policies in place at the time of the declaration. Renew the policies in place. There is no mention about at what price, but I think that's what that means, where it says renew the policies in place at the time of the declaration. So if you had a policy in place and you were in one of these zip codes, you can't get canceled for a year, okay? Yeah, so in addition, rescind non-renewal notices and offer to reinstate or renew the policies in place. Okay, so in other words, if your policy was about to expire, the way I read this, they have to renew it for a year. Now, there's a bunch of zip codes. I'm not going to read all these, but basically, the following fires began during the state of emergency: the Getty Fire in L.A., the Hill Fire, Water Fire, 46 Fire in Riverside County, Hillside Fire in San Bernardino County, Easy Maria Fire in Ventura County, and the Sky Fire, Glen Cove Fire, Solano, and Contra Costa Counties. They go on to give a bunch of zip codes for the Saddle Ridge Fire, the Eagle Fire, Kincaid Fire, the Tick Fire, Getty Fire, Hill Fire, and Maria Fire. So at least something, right? Now, if you're here in Nevada County, none of those are listed. We never got a state of emergency declared, so this doesn't apply to you. But it is an interesting movement, you know. I guess you could say they're trying, right? I went to the Department of Insurance, the town hall meeting, and, you know, met Mr. Lara and kind of gave my input on what I thought of the meeting in a variety of articles, and I do believe I even covered it on the show. So, anyway, so the Cal Fire policy. So what happens is that if you're in a high fire area and you get canceled, you know, much like the assigned risk for problem drivers, the Cal Fire policy is not a company per se. It's the same companies that canceled you. So the Cal Fire policy is all the insurance companies cobbled together in a big lump. They share profits and they share the losses. If you're doing business in California and you do 12% of insurance business in California, you have 12% of their profits and 12% of the claims against you. That's how they do it. So all the companies that you are familiar with that may have canceled you, they're all in the California Fire Plan. They're the only one that'll write your policy. It's a bare bones policy. Now, bare bones means it only covers fire, lightning, internal explosion, which is whatever, water heater or whatever, and no liability. So that's why you have to have two policies. You have the Cal Fire policy that covers fire. Okay? Now, they don't say wildfire, fire. So if you burn your house down because you get your kitchen, Cal Fire plan, pick that up. It's bare bones. Unlike some other policies that say, you know, we'll insure your house for $500,000 and we'll give you 10% overage for that. Cal Fire basically says, you tell me what you want to insure and how much you want to insure it for, and that's it. They make no warranty, nor does your agent make a warranty that he's given you adequate coverage. That's up to the customer to say that's enough or that's not enough. And there's people out there that can help you do that. Perhaps your realtor could talk about it. And keep in mind that land is not insured. So you're just talking about your building, okay? So the agent or you, because you can apply to California Fair yourself, although it's recommended to get an agent to help you. There's no additional charge for getting an agent. Cal Fair will pay the agent a small piece, but it doesn't cost you anymore. But you could apply yourself if you wanted to, but if you don't know anything about insurance. So the Cal Fair agreement. Can't read the whole thing. Don't have enough time, but let's just go over what it does. Cal Fair covers coverage A. All standard policies. Coverage A is the dwelling. Okay. The dwelling that's notated on the policy included structures attached to the dwelling, attached, bolted on. So if you have a deck that's bolted on your house, that's attached. If you have a deck that's separated by a walkway or an awning, that's detached. That's not covered in dwelling A coverage, okay? They cover that, the dwelling. They cover materials and supplies located on or next to the described location used to construct, alter, or repair the dwelling. And they cover also, if not otherwise covered in another part of the policy, building equipment and outdoor equipment used for the service and service of the property and located at the described location, such as like, you know, building equipment, outdoor equipment, like the lawnmower. Okay? That's coverage A, dwelling. And when you apply, you go in and it says dwelling. How much do you want to insure it for? We'll talk about how they insure it in just a second. Coverage B, other structures. Okay? We cover other structures on the described location set apart from the dwelling by clear space, okay? In other words, if it's a deck in the yard or a shed or a well, that's covered under other structures. If it's a deck that's bolted on, that's covered under the dwelling. If it's not bolted on, it's other structures. And in Cal Fair, you have to tell them what the structure is. They have a little drop down. It says shed, well house, pump house. And so what happens is you tell them what it is, and you tell them how much insurance you want on it. Remember, they don't warrant. They don't guarantee that you're going to be picking enough. It's up to you or your agent to help you decide. But the final decision is yours. Okay? Coverage does not apply to land. Land is not insured. They do not cover structures that are used whole or in part for commercial, professional, manufacturing, or farming. That's not covered. They do not cover any structures that are rented or held for rental to any person, not a tenant of the dwelling, used solely except as a private garage. It's kind of we won't get into that too much. But you can get policy if you're renting a place, okay? If you are a renter, you get renter's insurance. The dwelling is really not your responsibility. But if you're a landlord, yes, you can get coverage through this on buildings that you rent out. But we're talking about the homeowner version of it, okay? Now, what they do, it's kind of interesting. Let's say you insured a house dwelling for $500,000, and you insured, that's under coverage A. And then you insured some other structures for $50,000. I got a well, and I got a pump house, and I got a shed, and a detached carport, and a detached deck down in the hole, or solar system down in the hole. If you don't have enough coverage on structures, let's say you fire wipes you out and you had $50,000, it took $60,000, okay? They say, quote, you may use up to 10% of coverage A, the dwelling, the 500, 10% of that is 50. If you're burned or destroyed by peril is a cause of loss, and you can use 10% of the dwelling coverage to pay for more of other structures, but it does knock down the coverage available in the dwelling. So you had 500. And you had 50 on your other structures under coverage B, and you needed an extra $10,000 because you didn't insure enough for coverage B, the other structures, you can take 10 out of the 500 that covers the dwelling. That reduces the money available to the dwelling to 490, but you can bleed it over. That's very common for a lot of these policies. They do cover the other structures up to the limit of liabilities for that stated structure. So you list shed and you say, I want to insure it for $5,000. That's all they're going to do, $5,000. But if you need a little extra and you didn't use up all the dwelling coverage, you can use 10% for that. Okay. Personal property coverage C, your stuff. Cut the roof off a house, turn it upside down, and all the stuff that falls out is your stuff. They cover personal property that's normal to the occupancy of a dwelling, everything you would normally have owned and used by you or members of your family residing with you while you're at the described location. They will cover personal property owned by a guest or household employee while the property is on the described location if you request it. My maid burned her suitcase. If you remove the property from the described location, let's say you're moving, right? They'll cover your stuff in either place up to 30 days, okay? And this coverage will not extend beyond the termination of the policy. In other words, if you move and your policy expires during the move, as soon as it expires, you're not covered, okay? And it's limited to the amount that you put on there, to personal property. So you could put, how much stuff do you have in the house and in the garage? $50,000 worth of stuff, furniture and all that. Now, they're not going to cover anything weird like a Rembrandt or Picasso. They're going to give you a standard replacement cost for just a standard photograph. They're not going to really give you money for the Rembrandt. You can ask them to cover a Rembrandt if you want, and then you got to get an appraisal, and they're going to charge you for that extra piece, okay? They don't cover a lot of stuff, and they have a whole list of stuff. I'll go over some. You know, they don't cover coins or bullion. They'll cover your silverware, but not coins or bullion. They won't cover currencies, passports, personal records, animals, birds, or fish, aircraft, except hobby aircraft, like your little thing you fly around. Motorized vehicles, unless they're used to service the property or move around people that are handicapped. They don't cover any vehicles or conveyances not subject to motor vehicle registration. Okay. So, they don't cover watercraft other than rowboats, kayaks, and canoes. So, there's a whole bunch of things that we could go through for hours on this, but we're trying to skip over. Okay. They have something called permitted incidental occupancy. We won't go through that. That's a little bit more. They will give you an opportunity, if you want, to cover plants, shrubs, and trees. Those that you plant, not indigenous. Okay. They won't cover more than $250 on one plant and $500 to remove a tree. Okay. And they won't insure any plants that are made illegal or lawful by any federal, state, or local law. So if you're growing cannabis and they see it, they will cancel you. Fair rental value, coverage D. So we got coverage A is dwelling, coverage B is other structures, C is contents, your stuff. D, fair rental value. We'll also call that loss of use. If you put money in there on the check mark, because you have to pick each one of these, okay? Fair rental value means if you get kicked out of your home because of a fire, remember the California fair is fire, internal explosion, lightning, those are the things they're going to cover. If you get kicked out, they'll pay you a certain amount, whatever you say, but they'll only pay you monthly. So let's say you put, well, I might be kicked out for 2 years if a fire burns my house down. I want $80,000, which is $4,800 a month or whatever it is. They're not going to give you it all up front. They're just going to cover you monthly until it's used up, right? Until it's used up. If you rent something out, you can prove, and you put in there fair rental value, this is what I could rent it for, and I can't rent it anymore, they'll cover that as well. Okay? And remember, they'll only pay you once a month. They're not going to cash you out because they're going to pay you once a month based on a 30-day month. They have some exclusions, some other things. Again, it's too long, but For instance, they don't cover loss or expense due to cancellation of a lease or agreement. So there are, you know, I always recommend people read this policy. This policy is not that difficult to read. And again, if you put in a loss of use or fair rent to value amount, 80 grand, and you need a little bit more, right? You can use up to 10% of the dwelling coverage again for fair rent to value of loss of use. Okay, so that's a coverage that will bleed over that dwelling coverage. If you don't use it all, you can bleed that over to other structures, and you can bleed that over to fair rental value as well. Okay. Debris removal. Well, they got to haul your house away, right? If it burns down or burns partially down, they will pay a reasonable expense for the removal of the debris if you select the coverage, and you're going to tell them how much. Now, they do have limits. You can't put too much. They base the limits on the amount of the dwelling coverage that you originally selected. So the dwelling coverage is the real one that everything's based on, okay? So they don't let you just put in, well, I got a dwelling coverage and I want loss of use of, I got a dwelling coverage of $500,000, I want loss of use of $500,000. They won't do that. Okay, it's a percentage, okay? They will pay for the removal of the debris of the covered property if it was damaged by the loss that they insure against, right? Fire, lightning, internal explosion. They will remove ash, dust, and particles from a volcanic eruption. I guess the people in Hawaii would have to look at that, right? Probably specifically written for that. You may use any amount of the limited liability shown in coverage A, dwelling, coverage B, other structures, or contents for the reasonable expenses you incur for the removal of debris damaged by loss that we cover. So you can use any amount. So basically, if you picked a high dwelling coverage and you didn't pick debris, you could use part of the dwelling coverage. Remember, it does eat into that. Okay? That's if there's a check mark next to the debris removal. You have to pick each one. Okay? You have to pick each one. The debris removal does not include abatement of hazardous materials. Okay? Then they go on to talk about if you're a condominium owner or a tenant of the described location. There's some things that will apply there. Then there's also improvements, alterations, and additions. You can pick that. And they basically say in the policy, we cover improvements, alterations, and additions made at your expense to your part of the described location, whether rented to others or not. So if you put an addition on there and you check payments under coverage C, if there's a check mark next to, quote, improvements, alterations, and additions, they will cover up to the limit. And remember, that's all they'll go to the limit, although you can bleed some coverages from one to the other. People don't know this, but they do cover your stuff worldwide. Worldwide coverage. If you check coverage C, contents, your stuff, you may use up to 10% of that. So let's say you checked in $50,000 for your stuff. You could use up to 10% of that anywhere in the world for a loss by a peril insured against to property coverage under coverage C while anywhere in the world, but not rowboats, kayaks, or canoes. So if they're off the property, your rowboats, kayaks, and canoes are not insured. This does not apply to property of guests or household employees. If it's your son, yes. If somebody's staying at your house and they're over in Guam and they lose their stuff, no. Household employees is not if you have a home business and somebody comes in and works for you. So household employees means you get like a gardener or a maid or something like that. If you do elect to use 10% of coverage C, your stuff coverage for anywhere in the world, you're in a hotel and you get broken into, it does reduce the amount of coverage C. So anytime they take a little bit from coverage for Rob Peter to pay Paul, they will take the limit down. Okay? They also have something that's included called reasonable repairs. Okay, in the event that the covered property is damaged by an applicable peril, right? Lightning, fire, internal explosion. We will pay the reasonable cost incurred by you for necessary measures taken solely to protect against further damage. And that's actually your responsibility. You must help protect against further damage. Which means if your house hit by lightning and make a hole in the house and it's raining, you have to make necessary efforts to cover the hole, be covered. We will pay the reasonable costs incurred by you for necessary measures taken solely to protect against further damage, right? Figure it out so it doesn't get any more damage, because they know they'll have to pay more if you just don't do anything. They're saying if a reasonable repairs does not increase the limit of liability that it applies to the covered property. In other words, you don't get more. You only get what you originally signed up for. And it does not relieve you of your duties in case of a loss covered set forth in the below conditions. It basically means you have to make an effort to protect your stuff. If you move your stuff out, they'll cover it wherever you move your stuff out to for, I believe, a period of 2 weeks. We'll get to that. Fire department charge, they'll pay up to $500 for a fire department to come to your house, unless you're in the city limits, and then they won't pay anything because they figure the fire department's going to be pretty close. Here's what they insure against. Fire or lightning. It doesn't say wildfire or lightning. Fire. So if you start your kitchen on fire and it burns the house down. Internal explosion. What's that? Anything that can blow up in your house, but it does not include electrical arcing, breakage of water pipes. You break a water pipe, they're not covered. Or any pressure release devices. This, in other words, if you're renting a steam boiler or have a steam thing that's on your property, it's not covered. They'll also cover against smoke damage. Okay? When used in this policy, smoke damage means sudden and accidental direct physical loss from smoke, including airborne, windborne, or wind-driven combustion byproducts or particulates such as carbon soot, ash, char, and debris that is visible to the unaided human eye. Or odor from smoke or ash is detected by the unaided human nose of an average person. It's not subject to, like, I smell something, but nobody else does. I had a laboratory test, and they picked up smoke. No. They're basically saying if an average guy can smell it, okay. And if you argue, then you're allowed to go to get a judge. A judge would be anybody you elect to at your expense, and they get a judge, anybody they elect to at their expense. And then a third party, which you split the expense. A third party is the deciding party. If none of you can agree, then you got to go judge and do that. The smoke, if it comes from agricultural smudging or industrial operations, or intentional fire sources routinely found in and around the home, right? Like your barbecue, they're not going to cover it. They have other things you can cover. Outdoor radio and TV equipment, if you want to cover that. If you have an antenna, et cetera, et cetera. They insure for direct loss by windstorm or hail or radio and TV antennas if you check that. I had a guy, he had some awnings, $6,000 worth of awnings, had two of them, $12,000. He wanted to cover them. So they said if you check that and put a number in there and you put awnings and you put $6,000, they say we will insure for direct loss by windstorm or hail to awnings or canopies, including their supports. We shall not be liable for more than the limit of liability shown in the declarations. In other words, throughout this policy, they're not going to pay more than you selected for and paying for, okay? They're not going to pay more. You can also insure signs, if you have some signs out front. They go into what they won't cover. Aircraft, things of that sort. What they will cover, just to be specific, fire, lightning, internal explosion, smoke damage, explosion, with some exceptions, riot or civil commotion, there's a riot and they tear your house apart, aircraft, in case you get hit by an airplane, they'll cover that, but not a self-propelled missile or spacecraft. It does include that. So if you get hit by a missile or a spacecraft, you're covered. But not war. Acts of war are different. Vehicles. Only vehicles used to service the property or move the handicapped. They will cover fences. If you check fences, they'll say, okay, we'll cover your fences. Is it wood or is it other material, metal or other material? And then you got to put how much. They'll cover against volcanic eruption other than loss caused by earthquake, land shock, waves, or tremors. So it's not earthquake coverage. And if a volcanic eruption causes an earthquake, you're not covered. Vandalism or malicious mischief. This is kind of an odd one. Okay. Vandalism, malicious mischief, you got to check the box. And from what I've seen, it doesn't really add much, if at all, to the policy. Can't guarantee anything. Okay, just my opinion. Vandalism or malicious mischief, meaning willful and malicious damage to or destruction of the described property, right? Then they have some exclusions, okay? Glass, safety material, theft, burglary, larceny. But we will be covered to the damage caused by the burglars. In other words, they're not going to cover your stuff if it's stolen, but if they screw up the house while they're there, then you'll be covered. There are some other exclusions. There's a lot of exclusions in here, okay? They also have ordinance of law, okay? There's another check mark there, okay? What is ordinance of law? Okay. If you're required, just as a standard coverage, if you're required to move out because a neighbor had a fire and they shut down the neighborhood, they'll pay you to move out for 2 weeks only, okay? But this ordinance of law is actually a little bit different. They will pay for, if you got an old house, they'll repay to replace the old house if you have replacement coverage, if it burns down. But they won't pay to bring it up to code, okay? If a new house requires sprinklers and solar, they're not going to pay for that unless you check the box ordinance of law, okay? That means we will pay for the increased cost for you incur due to the enforcement against you or any ordinance of law which requires or regulates construction, demolition, renovation, or repair. So in other words, if your house has to be upgraded or there's certain codes that require that you remove it in a certain way, then they will cover that if you check the box and cover that up to the amount that you put. But there is a maximum that they'll allow you. It has to be the part of the building or the structure that's insured, and it has to be because it was damaged by the peril that they're insuring against. Okay. We will not pay for any such costs incurred by you for work done on damaged property. In other words, if you're fixing something that's not damaged and it gets damaged, you're not going to pay. They have a couple more exclusions, but you know, all insurance policies are going to have lots of exclusions. I mean, I'm on page 8 of 18. Okay, so this policy is really not that hard to read. There are other exclusions. They go all the way through here. Earth movement, water damage. They'll cover if you. They won't cover water damage, flood, surface water, waves, tidal water, water which backs up through sewers and drains, water below the ground, direct loss or by fire or explosion resulting from water damage is covered. In other words, if there's flood and it causes a fire and the fire burns your house down, okay, that's going to be covered because it's got to be the peril that's insured against, which is fire or internal explosion to the others. They won't cover against a power failure. No. Neglect. If you'd fail to keep the property up, no. Not going to cover you. War. Undeclared war. Civil war. Insurrection. Rebellion. Warlike military action. Nuclear detonation. Nuclear hazard. Not covered. Intentional loss. If you go out and tear your own door off. Okay. Then they go into the conditions. About how you should pay the premium. You have to have an insurable interest in whatever you're insuring. In other words, you can't insure your neighbor's house because you don't have an insurable interest there. You have to do certain things like exhibit the damaged property. You got to show them. You got to provide them with records and documents if they request. You have to submit to an examination under oath if they request. Produce witnesses if they request. A signed sworn proof of loss in 60 days if they request, et cetera, et cetera. The time and cause of loss, all the other specifics on how it happened, okay? Now, there is a little hook in here. I'm going to run out of time. Coverage A and B, which is structures, other structures and B, they say, okay, if you don't check replacement cost, and that's a box that you can check or not check, okay? Now, they won't let you check it if your roof is over 25 years old. Or if your house is over 25 years old and you don't have a new roof, they won't let you check replacement costs. So if you don't check replacement costs, and they won't let you because your roof is too old. They got a real thing about roofs. Tell me about it. We will cover total loss. In case of a total loss to the property, we will pay the actual cash value before the loss is measured by the fair market value of the covered property up to the policy limits. Okay, fair market value. Total loss. They'll cover fair market value at the time of the loss. Partial loss, here's where it can get you if you don't have replacement costs. In case of partial loss of the property, we will pay the actual cash value of the partial loss as measured by the amount it would cost you to repair, rebuild, or replace the thing lost or damaged, less a fair and reasonable deduction for physical depreciation based upon the condition at the time of loss or the policy, whichever is lost. Now, so if you don't check replacement cost, they're going to depreciate whatever they're going to replace. But then they say that this depreciation is only applicable to, quote, components of the structure that are normally subject to repair and replacement during the useful life of the structure. I've had three different attorneys look at that. And the way we can discern this is that if you have a total loss, you don't have replacement costs, they're going to cover it to the fair market value, the dwelling, not the land, okay? If you have a partial loss, the things that are normally subject to repair and replacement during the useful life of the structure will have a deduction for physical depreciation. Well, what do you normally have to replace in a house? Not the walls, right? So the common belief is that is the roof, which is why the roof kicks it out. They're also saying if you've got an old roof, you can't get replacement costs on the roof because it was an old roof. Now, you could also say that are components of a structure that are normally subject to repair and replacement during the useful life of that structure that could be said to be decks as well. Okay. Total loss, you know, they have a description of it. The property is completely destroyed such that it loses its identity and character as a structure. I love that one. There's another little thing called inflation guard in the declarations. Okay, the inflation guard sounds like it's working for you. No, it's not working for you. That one means that it says you have given us permission to increase the limit of liabilities for coverage A. In other words, if you check that, and it will be checked, when they renew, they will boost it to protect them. Okay? That and the ordinance of law coverage to reflect changes in the cost of construction determined by them. Okay. There's such a thing as concealment of fraud if you lie to them, et cetera, but in any case, I would recommend it's easy to just Google up sample policy for the California Fair Plan and read through it. It's not bad reading, really, actually. So that's it. I mean, we have definitely run out of time, and it went so quick, you know what I mean? For sure. So you are listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. Our website, my website, is moneymanagementradio.com. Everything is free. Not allowed to pay for, you know, you can't pay for anything there. It's our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. Comments about the show can be sent to the program director of the radio station. That's easy. Discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative to Cambridge Investment Research Advisors, Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The indices I may have mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk. Depending on the types of investments, there may be varying degrees of risk. Investors should be prepared to bear loss, including total loss of principal. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge's station and staff members or underwriters. Show 298 will be available in about a week and a half. If the regulators approve it, I think they will. I didn't say anything weird today. I really appreciate you coming in. And that was the last of our series. You can hear every show on fire insurance on the website, moneymanagerradio.com. And again, everything is free. Okay? Everything is free. It's our way of saying community radio stations are great. Please consider what they may need to operate. Volunteer, support, whatever. Volunteer, work at the festivals, all sorts of things. My name is Mark Cunaberdy. I want to just thank you very much for tuning in today. The Dow is closing up 23. We'll see what happens watching the market so you don't have to. My name is Mark Cunaberdy. God bless. Have a great day.